couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Ambulance, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Cow, and All the Old Knives. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Upload Season 2. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news, this actually came last week, but the show was wrapped in the can before the news hit, and that is that Will Smith resigned from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Now, that's, of course, following the Oscar kerfuffle, where he walked up on stage and slapped Chris Rock, refused to leave the auditorium when asked, and then Chris Rock, as I would say, was the hero of the night for not pressing charges, and as a result did not have him dragged out in handcuffs or anything. But he has resigned. He did that last Friday, and he also said he's willing to take any sort of additional disciplinary action that the Academy is going to send his way. But what does that mean? What does it mean to resign from the Academy? You know, it basically means he can't vote or nominate things. He can still make movies. He can still be nominated as an actor in the future, and he can be invited back to the ceremonies as either a presenter or anything like that. All it means is he's lost his nomination and voting privileges within the Academy, and, you know, like some other minor perks that come along with that, but that's basically the impact that has. It's not a ton. But, I mean, it's certainly symbolic and a big deal, at least for an actor. And then there's going to be a disciplinary hearing. I think that's actually been pushed up to this weekend. And we'll find out whether the Academy is going to do anything else. I don't expect them to ask him to give back the Oscar. Look, if he gave back the Oscar and it went to somebody else, I think that that's going to taint the Oscar for whoever were to get that. So I think what they should do is they should just weld a hand to the Oscar statuette on the face to have that be a reminder for him. But that's just me. That's just my crazy ideas. But you know, it's funny. I saw some people complaining about other, you know, when I talked about this last week about other people having kerfuffles or issues. And, you know, people said, well, if you're going to make him give back his Oscars, why not Harvey Weinstein? Well, Harvey Weinstein, he didn't do anything on stage. The key with the Will Smith thing was it happened during the ceremony. You got to be careful. You know, I'm not going to rail against cancel culture because I think that sometimes there are certain people that should be canceled. Harvey Weinstein needed to be canceled, as did O.J. Simpson, as did Bill Cosby. These are real people that I think should be removed from the equation. But as a consumer of entertainment, you cannot be in charge of whether or not somebody can do anything. Like, I saw somebody complaining that Louis C.K. won a Grammy. And this person was saying, if you're upset at Will Smith, you should also be upset at Louis C.K. being nominated. And I'm like, well, okay, here's the thing. He didn't do anything during the Grammy ceremony. It's not like he exposed himself during the Grammy ceremony. All this stuff happened behind the scenes, and he lost the distribution of his film, and his TV show got canceled, and he kind of had to rebuild. I mean, how long do you keep your sins? I'm pretty sure Louis C.K. is not repeating the behavior he's did that got him in trouble. So, you know, these are false equivalencies. And the last thing you want to do is determine whether you're going to like a movie or TV series or music by somebody that you don't particularly like. Now, I mean, it's one thing if they're like a murderer like O.J. Simpson or a rapist like Bill Cosby, but you can't sit there and say, well, that person, I don't particularly like him. You may not like, for example, you know, like James Woods, he's a little bit incendiary, or like Randy Quaid. You could not like Randy Quaid as a person, but you can still enjoy his performance in everything from Kingpin to Independence Day to Parents. The next piece of news is about the box office. Morbius won, but it was really soft, and that's because it was awful. And what's interesting, and that caused some pause, I think, at Sony, because I was hearing reports that it was going to be making in the $50 million range. And then they sort of backpedaled during the weekend saying, well, it's maybe going to be in the low 40s, but it should crack 40, and it didn't. It hit $39 million, which is not a bad number. I mean, that's more than what the Lost City made the week before. But if you look at the numbers, Lost City's holding. Those are the things that are interesting to watch. If you watch the two of them, because they're going to just kind of ride down that list into the future, Lost City's going to end up making more money than Morbius because it's going to have staying power because it's a better film. Whereas Morbius is garbage and it's going to be very front loaded and it's crashing. And that actually has happened over the weekend. That's whenever they start revising numbers throughout the weekend and it gets lower and lower, that's how you know the movie has terrible word of mouth. But Sony's been wanting to do a standalone Spider-Man series for years. I mean, they wanted to do Sinister Six all the way back during the Amazing Spider-Man days. But you got to remember, Spider-Man No Way Home, the only reason that was such a hit was because of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It involved Doctor Strange and the use of the multiverse. And yeah, they drew from old Spider-Man movies, but they were building completely off of something that was built by Marvel Studios and not by Sony. And I think Sony, and I predicted this, Sony's going to get greedy and they're going to want to do their own little Spider-Man universe. And it's just not going to be the same because they're making movies like Morbius and Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which are terrible. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the Bob's Burgers movie, which is coming to theaters on May 27th.
You have 7 days to make your payment.
Seven?
It's gonna be okay, Bob. Happy. Mm. Hopeful. Mm. Kissy lips.
Please.
Oh! Oh my God.
Louise, don't go down there. It's dangerous. Ah!
Sister, please. I'd like to report a thing happened.
What do we do? Ideas, go.
Ooh, what's this thing?
No.
Can you believe it?
Ta-da!
I'm a huge fan of Bob's Burgers. I got to go back and watch a bunch of these episodes and catch up because I love the show. I think it's a great show. It's the only thing that worries me is I'm never a big fan of making a theatrical film where you got to pay $10 a pop or $15 a pop to see it for something you get free on TV every week. I thought they figured out how to do it with the Simpsons movie about 15 years ago by making it a bigger cinematic experience. But you can also run into problems where it kind of killed the X-Files franchise because they made the film, the X-Files, the first one, in the middle of the show being on the air. It's a real dangerous game to play, but you know, we'll see if Bob's Burgers can manage that. I have faith. It's funny enough that I could go for a long form version of Bob's Burgers.
Minions! There are a lot of other villains in the world, but I am going to be a super villain.
This puny little child thinks he can be a villain.
I am pretty despicable. My minions will save me.
You like picking on little guys, huh? I am a master of kung fu.
Teach a new kung fu? Por smoochie smoochie.
The next one I want to hit is Minions, The Rise of Gru, which is in theaters on July 1st. I look back, the first time I covered this movie in the trailer park was a couple years ago. It was like before the pandemic. And this thing was like, here, the movie's going to be coming out. But this was all disrupted because of the pandemic, because Illumination Studios had to shut down production and because they couldn't go into the office and everything. And so it's taken a while for this thing to happen. Now it's going to finally happen because it's been like, what was it, like 7 years since the first Minions movie came out, like 2015? So I'm looking for, I like the Minions. I'll admit, I think they're cute. I think they're funny. I think they're better than the Despicable Me movies because they're trying to juggle too many characters in the Despicable Me movies, whereas the Minions movies, you just got the stupid Minions running around and Gru can kind of swerve in here and there, but they don't have to pay tribute to like 15 other characters, which is what happens in these animated films. They start to collapse under their own weight. So I don't know. The Minions movie, it looks cute. It looks stupid, but it looks like it's going to be fun. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Ambulance and Cow. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie review, or careen into the movie reviews with Ambulance, Michael Bay's latest movie. Two bank robbers steal an ambulance with a wounded cop in a desperate attempt to escape their heist location with the money.
My wife needs this surgery.
This is real life.
How's that right? You put your life down on the line for this country? You leave your family, your home? How much do you need?
231.
How about more? 32 million. And I need an extra man.
I came to you for a loan.
Look, have I ever gotten you anything that I couldn't get you out of? It's time for you to do something for your family.
Go, 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 go!
Lock everything down. Nothing gets out.
This is a Michael Bay movie. If you haven't seen a Michael Bay movie, they're all the same. Some have transforming robots, some don't. But they're basically big, explosive action movies. He got his start doing beer commercials, and he never grew out of that. And so all of his movies, and this one is no exception, is a giant beer commercial, which means it looks fantastic. It's got gorgeous imagery in it. The action movement of the camera becomes absurd at a certain point. He uses drones, and I mean, he like does this stuff where he flies up the side of a building and down the side of a building for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it's camera movement for the sake of camera movement. It's all explosions and all action and all overdone crap. This is nothing different. Now, it doesn't involve giant transforming robots, so it may not appeal to everybody. But I have seen so many Michael Bay movies, and I think some of his movies, especially his earlier ones, are passable because they had the hands of the studio on him to make a coherent film as best as he could. But now that he doesn't have any, and people are just like, oh, here's money, make this movie. But the problem with this film, it's nonsensical, and the story has giant plot holes that are so huge, even someone like me who does not work with ambulances or in bank robbery situations can look at this and say, well, this doesn't make sense. For example, there's a scene where they get in the ambulance and they're stealing it, and the one guy says, how do they track this? And the medic, she's like, oh, they use satellite. And he reaches under the dashboard and pulls out something, and he goes, I found it, and throws it out of the window. I'm pretty sure, first of all, ambulances ain't cheap. These are not Hyundais that they spent $15,000 on. The ambulances, I would imagine, are probably like $100,000 a piece. So they want to keep track of them, and they don't want people taking them on joyrides. So I imagine the transponder is going to actually be in the engine somewhere, and it's going to have some sort of remote disabling device on it. Also, there's like another scene where they're like, oh, go steal five more ambulances. Oh, they just have the keys in the cab. I don't think it's that easy to steal ambulances because they don't want people taking them on joyrides or stealing the equipment inside. The movie itself doesn't even make pragmatic sense as you're watching it. I don't know how they get to situations like, the whole thing is the main character, he's a Marine, a vet, who is down on his luck, and his wife's got cancer, and he needs this like $200,000 to pay for some experimental treatment. So he goes to his adoptive brother, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, and he's like, oh, can I borrow some money? He's like, yeah, well, let's go on this bank robbery. It's for $32 million. Apparently, they have it in this vault in this bank. That's this once in a lifetime thing. And there's no security whatsoever. There's not even the off-duty cop. They don't even show him getting in there. They just show up at the bank and they're already in the middle of the robbery. And I'm like, if they had $32 million in cash sitting there, they would probably have heavily armed guards. And the whole movie, it is just hosed down with testosterone. I feel like I've just been in a NASCAR Budweiser smoothie. This movie is, it's exhausting to watch. And that's all it is just this ambulance driving around L.A. being chased by the cops. Yet somehow the ambulance has the ability to make maneuvers on hairpin turns like a Jaguar sports car. And all the cop cars crash into each other. They never at any point are able to get in front of them, even though they've got cops all over the city and they've got air support. Nobody throws out, you know, a spike strip in front of the ambulance. The whole thing is hinged on the fact that there's this injured cop in the back, and they're like, we can't let that cop die. But no amount of collateral damage of innocent people's lives on the street or property damage or the fact that other cops are getting blown up in their cars as they're crashing and careening off of cliffs. No amount of that carnage balances out the life of this guy in this ambulance. They don't even know if he's fully alive. I mean, this movie is awful. It is so bad. I mean, it looks good, but it is an absolute turd sandwich. I mean, this is a giant steaming bowl of diarrhea soup, and it runs 2 hours and 16 minutes for like 45 seconds of plot. That makes no sense. There's twists and turns, and things just sort of happen, and they don't explain it. This is a terrible movie. It's awful. It's even bad for a Michael Bay film. So, Ambulance totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Do a real quick one for Cow. This is a great bookend against Ambulance, which is machismo garbage. And then Cow is this fly on the wall type documentary. This documentary looks at the life of a dairy cow from its own perspective. No dialogue in the trailer aside from what the cow says and the cow's chewing on grass. That's the movie. It basically starts from the birth of this cow and takes it through its life as it lives on a dairy farm. They bring in a sire, and the cow then gives birth to a calf itself. And I think I've seen this categorized as like a vegan film. It's supposed to show the cow as a character, and you see that cows have emotions and connections, and I mean, we're talking domesticated cows that over thousands and thousands and thousands of years have been put into either food or milk or both. I guess it's supposed to get you to identify with the cow, but if there's anything I took away from it, it is just how filthy cows are. There's so many shots of the cow's rear end when it's, you know, given birth and everything that's coming out of it to going into the pen. And you could almost smell the movie, how weighted down in manure it smells like. And that's not necessarily a criticism. It's just it shows the reality of a cow living on a farm. And I think it's supposed to make you feel for the cow. But I don't get a huge sense that it's living a terrible life. It's getting fed, it's getting everything it needs. But I mean, it's an interesting approach in the sense that it is one of those cinema verite fly on the wall type thing of just watching this cow, just going through the daily life of this cow for an hour and a half, and you watch it kind of through its whole life. And so that's kind of an interesting approach, but it's certainly not an action movie like Ambulance is. So I'm gonna have to say I did enjoy it for what it was, although it definitely is not for everybody, even if you like documentary. So I'm gonna say Cow kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Dr. Robotnik is back to steal Sonic's power with some help from Knuckles, but Tails also flies in to help the Hedgehog.
What's happening?
Okay, quick version. Robotnik is back.
I discovered the source of ultimate power.
We need to get it back or the world is doomed.
You brought some kind of space porcupine.
I am an echidna warrior.
Hedgehog. It's time to say goodbye to humanity.
You know, it's funny. I think back to that blurb I just did, and
That makes no sense whatsoever.
This is playing a little bit more into fan service, which is good. I mean, look, if you make a movie about Sonic the Hedgehog, you should be playing to fan service. And what's interesting with this series now, because it's the second movie, the first movie was one of the last big releases before the pandemic hit. Early 2020, one of the last movies that had a release schedule that allowed it to play out for the month or so and make some money before everything got shut down. And I gotta say, I was pleasantly surprised with Sonic the Hedgehog, the first one. I never saw it until later in the year, but I always thought it was really cute. And one of the things that I think is a win for the whole series was that when they had that terrible design for Sonic originally, and everybody went nuts and said, this looks terrible and looks weird and creepy, they spent money to go back and redesign him to make him look more authentic to the original video game and the original animated series. And that's good. And I think they carry that on here because the Sega Genesis video game elements look like they're real. They're not existing in some weird, uncanny valley. Overall, it's very much the same energy and the same type of story as you got with the first movie. Now, it does try to balance all the characters. And this is what I mentioned earlier in the first segment when I was talking to the trailer park about the Despicable Me movies. When you have these animated series, they get more characters in each movie. And they want to give something for everybody, but you can only have so much. I mean, the Ice Age movies are a great example of that. By the time you got to the fourth or fifth Ice Age movie, there were so many characters, the entire film was collapsing because you had to have something for everybody. Madagascar felt the same way because they kept introducing new characters in each installment. The one thing with Sonic the Hedgehog that does cause it to crumble a little bit is they got to give everybody something. So they got to give James Marsden a part, even though his character was pretty critical in the first movie because he was the guy who runs into Sonic, and it allowed him to basically be the audience surrogate and get all the explanation for him. But now we know who Sonic is, and Sonic can just kind of have his own adventure. But James Marsden and Tika Sumpner have their own story, and they try to weave that in. And it's very awkwardly kind of shoehorned in right in the middle of the movie. To the point, I went with my 13-year-old, and we watched it. And I remember leaning over to him. I go, did I fall asleep in this movie? Because some of this stuff doesn't make sense. It feels like we're suddenly in a different movie. And that's it's trying to cover all the different characters that were introduced in the first film, and they don't do that great. But overall, the bulk of the story is about Sonic, and he runs into Tails, who is this fox with two tails that can fly that he's working with, and Dr. Robotnik has teamed up with Knuckles, who's voiced by Idris Elba, which I think is great that Idris Elba's playing this kind of a character. But it's ultimately a fun, high-energy action movie. Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik completely chews the scenery, as he should, because that's the absurdity of this film. I enjoyed it. I never even really played the game. I played the game for like 5 minutes in the 90s, and I go, well, I'm going to have an epileptic fit if I watch this too much. But the game itself, I know, is very popular among people, and my kids played it, and they watched the show. And so my 13-year-old, he enjoyed it, and we all thought it was really good. And then we went and got a chili dog afterwards at Sonic. So, you know, that subliminal advertising does work. It does run just a hair over 2 hours, which is a little bit too long. Like I said, if they didn't have that whole subplot with James Marsden and Tika Sumpner, they probably could have trimmed the story down a little bit, but they had to give them something to do. So hopefully they can streamline the third movie a little bit better. But yeah, no, this one's a hoot to watch. I enjoyed it. It's high energy. It's stupid. It's like cotton candy. You know, it's not going to fill you up, but it certainly is one of the better sequels you're going to see, playing off of, you know, this kind of one-off story that they had for the first film. So I'm going to say Sonic the Hedgehog kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and now it's time to talk about the next film, which is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. An unhappy woman is given the power to access memories and abilities from alternate versions of herself in order to save the universe.
I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. You can access all their memories, their emotions, even their skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
This movie was in limited release for the last couple weeks, and it's now getting a wide release this week. It stars Michelle Yao as the main character, and it's all kind of wrapped around her. It's directed by the Daniels, which are two guys named Daniel, and they are most well known for doing Swiss Army Man, which I loved. So they do kind of weird, out-of-the-box, very bizarre stuff. And this one, it's a multiverse movie, but don't just sit there and say, well, I liked Avengers Endgame, I liked Loki, so I better go see this. No, multiverse is, this is very heady. This is what I would refer to back in my days when I was growing up. There was this one theater in town that was the Art House Theater. It was called the Drexel Theater. It's still around. And I would refer to a movie as, that's a Drexel movie. That's the kind of thing that you wouldn't necessarily see in the multiplex. Now, you're going to find this in the multiplex, but it's more intellectual. It's by A24, and they tend to do stuff that leans more towards the independent crowd. Now, there are people who are loving this movie out there, and people going bonkers over this. And, you know, that's great. You found something you loved. I had reservations about it. I mean, it's neat because it plays around with the multiverse. And it also takes an absurd level, which you expect from the guys who did Swiss Army Man. But it does these things that are completely bonkers. Like, one of the things for her to access these alternate versions of herself across the multiverse, she has to do something unexpected or strange. Like putting her shoes on the wrong feet or breaking her own arm or something like that. And that reminds me a lot of Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with the improbability drive, which is what powered the spaceship they had. It's a very Douglas Adams inspired things. And I'm assuming that when the Daniels did this, they were playing off of their own riff of Douglas Adams. And I can appreciate that, but it is a bit jarring because at times it's very, very serious, but at times it's just absurd and ridiculous. I mean, almost to the point of, you know, if you remember the movie Dead Alive, I mean, it's a very different film, but that's an over-the-top film. It's a zombie movie that Peter Jackson did back in New Zealand back in the 90s. And that movie just goes off the rails, and it does crazy things, and it's over-the-top, and it's way out there. And just as you thought it couldn't get any stranger, it gets stranger. And that's what happens in this movie. But at times a little too whimsically bizarre for me. The other thing is the characters, they throw a lot at you, and there's a lot to resolve. And I think they managed to resolve all this stuff, you know, because Michelle Yao plays this woman and she doesn't particularly like herself or her life. And she regrets her marriage to her husband, and she's resentful to him. And she has a strained relationship with her daughter because her daughter is a girlfriend and she doesn't approve. And she has a strained relationship with her dad who's visiting. And so she's basically just a cantankerous, mean person. And they drag that on a little too much. If there was anything I'd say about this movie is it takes too long to do it. At a certain point, I started to hate her character because I'm like, oh my gosh, just quit being such an unpleasant person. I think some of the sequences in the film overstay their welcome. As a whole, the movie absolutely does work, and it does take care of itself. Is it a masterpiece? I'm not going to say it's a masterpiece, but it's really interesting. It's not 100% my cup of tea because it has some things that I didn't particularly like, but I can totally see the right person. If you like A24 stuff, and you know how you can tell if you like A24 stuff? If you know what A24 is. If you're familiar with the studio and the stuff that they work, then you probably are going to like this movie. And you're going to love it. And I know people who think it's the greatest movie of the year so far. I'm not going to say that, but it's certainly something interesting to watch. And it's pretty unique. It's unlike anything else you're going to see out there right now. So I'm going to have to say Everything Everywhere All at Once does rock.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about All the Old Knives and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Upload Season 2. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and wrap things up with All the Old Knives. This is playing on Prime Video, so if you've got a subscription to that, you can watch it for free, or for the price of the subscription. You don't really watch stuff on streaming for free. You do realize that. I mean, some of them like Pluto or Tubi, you can watch stuff for free. But if you're going to watch something on Netflix, you're not watching it for free. Even if you're using somebody else's password, somebody's paying for that. So this is on Prime Video, included with the subscription, and it's in select theaters. A CIA agent is put in charge of an investigation over leaks that happened during a devastating hostage crisis years ago.
They've opened the books on Flight 127.
hijackers had help from inside our station here in Vienna.
We need to find out if we had a mole.
Vic has me looking into Flight 127.
So this is an interview. I thought you were here to see if we still had that old spark.
To old friends.
Oh, you can do better than that.
To old lovers.
This is the second Chris Pine limited release direct-to-video streaming movie in as so many weeks. I don't know. Did he like incur some Nicolas Cage-sized debts or something? Because he's suddenly coming off of Wonder Woman 1984, and it's all stuff in these smaller films. And I'm not going to disparage him for that. That's great. You know, get your paycheck as it comes. But until they make the next Star Trek movie, I don't know what's on the horizon for this guy. All the Old Knives wants to be a tense espionage thriller. And there are some tense moments in it. I'll give that to it. But it's not an espionage movie the way, say, James Bond is. It's more like something from John le Carré. The espionage stuff that goes on in those books or movies and TV series that are based on them, they're realistic spy stuff. They're stuff what spies really do is just sort of sit in a room and listen to a microphone. Then maybe there's a tense moment where they're trying to escape and that's it. You know, this is not an action movie. It's meant to be a tense thriller, but it has some serious problems with it. The first problem it has is it bounces back and forth in time. You know, it has the current situation, which is taking place, where he's investigating people on his team, and in particular, a woman on his team, played by Tandy Newton, and she is his ex-lover. But then they're going back, I think, 8 years to when this thing happened, where there was this terrorist attack on this plane in Austria, and all the hostages died, men, women, and children, and they think it was because of a leak. And so it bounces back and forth in time, and I can handle something bouncing back and forth in time, and yeah, but his haircut's different, so you can sort of tell that, but it doesn't just bounce on two linear stories back and forth. Even the stuff that happens during the original event back 8 years ago, it bounces around in time, stuff before that, after it, in the middle of it. And it is really hard to figure out what your temporal geography is in this movie. It is all over the place. And the movie also just drags. I'm not expecting it to be a James Bond film. I'm not looking for car chases necessarily, but it just takes forever to develop these points and these turns in the plot. It's sort of like it's being narrated by that sloth from Zootopia, where it's like, and here's the next plot reveal. You know, I mean, it just takes, drags it out. So, I mean, this movie really could probably have been condensed to about a 40-minute TV episode, but they stretch it out to an hour and 40 minutes. And then as you're getting to the end, you know, the third act, I feel like I'm in a spaceship heading towards the event horizon of a black hole. Time is distorting. And you're like, you're looking at your clock and you go, oh, there's only 20 minutes left. And then you look down and go, oh my gosh, there's still 17 minutes left. It felt like a half hour passed. I wonder, why was it only 3 minutes? And then you're at like 10 minutes. And then the next 5 minutes, it seems like it's twice as long as that last 10 minutes. It just keeps going on and it's just stretching out. And it's just boring. And predictable too. I mean, it can figure it out. Like, I mean, from the opening credits, you can almost figure out what is happening. Now, apparently it's based on this guy's book, and it was maybe it's an intense book. I don't know. I just, it's boring even for a boring spy movie. So I couldn't take this anymore. So I was so happy when this thing was over. So I'm going to have to say that All the Old Knives sucks.
It sucks.
Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Upload Season 2. Now, I know this came out of this drop the whole season in one fell swoop sometime right around St. Patrick's Day. And I talked about the first season a year or so ago when it came out. But after his girlfriend uploads to be with him in an afterlife, a digital copy of a programmer tries to uncover some nefarious dealings about the platform.
Welcome to Upload, your digital afterlife.
Uploads live a life of
luxury, pleasure, but they're...
Photo tanks!
Congrats, Mommy.
Welcome back, Nora Anthony.
Thanks.
I got so much to tell you.
Ingrid gave up everything and uploaded for me.
Uploading should be accessible for everyone.
We're taking this place over.
What's funny is that trailer's terrible. That trailer doesn't give you any sense of story. And I guess that's kind of hits to the core of the problem with Upload as a show, not just this season. I mean, it's a fun show. It's created by Greg Daniels, who worked on The Office. And it's kind of a heady concept. The whole concept being is your consciousness can be pulled from your body and uploaded into a digital program. And then you live in that digital program, but only the rich people, you know, everything costs money, everything, you know, and if you don't have any money, you can be uploaded, but you're in slow speed. You're like pre-broadband speeds. And this guy's trying to figure out, he thinks somebody killed him. That's sort of the premise of this thing. And in this season, his girlfriend, who was paying for his upload, she has uploaded herself, or so she says, has uploaded herself into the program. And he's kind of fallen in love with this woman who works at the company, who is basically his connection to the outside world. And the big problem with Upload is it doesn't know whether it's trying to be just an absurd comedy or if it's trying to tackle real issues. Because at times it does, especially in this season, it's trying to take on class warfare, and it's trying to take on inequality and that sort of level, but it's still trying to be a goofy comedy. You know, one of the things it wishes it could be The Good Place. If you saw The Good Place, The Good Place was a great comedy. It was very funny, wickedly funny, and very, very smart. But it also dealt with some really heady concepts. It dealt with afterlife and predestination, and it dealt with ethics and morality. I mean, there was a lot of stuff woven into The Good Place, but The Good Place managed, for the most part, throughout all the episodes, to still be a fun comedy series, but tackle these sometimes tremendously complex issues. And Upload has the opportunity to do that. I mean, you're talking about identity and thought and the soul and religion, and but then they're kind of just going down to very pragmatic, hedonistic ideas like money and wealth and sex, which is, you know, very two-dimensional, where they can really explore some really interesting stuff with the people and what it means to be uploaded, and can you download the conscious into another body, because they're dealing with that in this season. But then they just want to kind of be goofy and silly. And you could do both, because like I said, The Good Place does that. This one, it doesn't quite know how to make that leap to something significant. And so every time you swerve near it, then they're like, oh, we need to have something goofy happen in the upload universe. So it's still a fun series. It's about on the level in terms of cohesion as the first season, but I really want it to go do something more. I want it to still be funny, but tackle something. And like I said, you watch The Good Place and they figured that out. They were able to do it. And that was another movie that was done by somebody who did The Office. So the connective tissue's there. And Upload could really become brilliant if it allowed itself to tackle even bigger issues that may not end up well for the character. So Upload season 2 is worth seeing. If you like the first season, this one's along the same lines, but I really wish it could be more. But I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week, we have Moonfall finally coming to VOD. And then if you're interested in buying a disc, Vicious Fun from Shudder, which is a great little horror movie, slasher movie send-up, that's available on disc, DVD, and Blu-ray. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Fantastic Beasts. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.